All right, Alexander, once again, we're going to be talking about Ghislaine Maxwell. And let me just go right to a title from The Guardian. Ghislaine Maxwell will not say anything about Prince Andrew, says a friend. Laura Goldman says she expects Maxwell to seek a plea deal over charges relating to exploitation of young girls. Further down in the article, says that Maxwell appeared in court in the U.S. on Thursday, accused of helping disgraced financier Epstein identify, befriend, and groom multiple girls, including one as young as 14. Asked if she would talk about Prince Andrew, Goldman said, quote, "No, she's always told me that she would never, ever say anything about him. I think she felt that he was her friend, and she was never, ever going to say anything about him. She really felt that in the 90s, when her father died, that Prince Andrew was there for her. In many ways, that is the key phrase that I'm focused on, where she says Prince Andrew was there for her. In many ways, just to give some background about Laura Goldman, according to The Guardian, once again, Laura Goldman, a former investment banker, said she had spoken to Maxwell in the past month. She spoke to Maxwell in the past month over the investigation into Epstein's sexual exploitation of young girls, and that she had seen she was, and I quote, coming to the end of the road. Speaking to the Today program on Saturday, Goldman was asked if Maxwell would seek to obtain a plea deal in which she might plead guilty to some charges in return for a commuted sentence. Quote, "I think she has to," Goldman said. So the key phrases to me was where Maxwell said that Prince Andrew was there for her in many ways in the 90s. To me, that signals some sort of relationship that goes beyond friendship. I don't know. I'm just using my intuition. I think you may actually have some hard facts to go along with that intuition, but that's my hunch when I read into that line. And the other interesting fact was that Goldman spoke to Maxwell. At least she said she spoke to Maxwell a month ago. And Maxwell said that she's coming towards the end of her road, the end of the road. So that's an interesting statement as well. Alexander, what do you make of this?
Oh, it's very, very interesting indeed. Now, a couple of things to say. First of all, I think it is widely understood in this country, in Britain, that Maxwell and Andrew had some kind of relationship. In other words, when I say a relationship, I mean an affair. I mean, to be absolutely clear about this, I don't want to, I'm not being evasive. I mean that they were lovers. And I have had information that, in fact, she was not only his lover, but that she was able to turn up at Buckingham Palace. This is the official residence in London of the Queen of England, the Queen of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, who is the mother of Prince Andrew, where Prince Andrew has already had an apartment, and she was able to walk through. She did not have to show papers. The Royal Protection Officers, the police who provide the bodyguard services for the royal family, were understanding instructions to let her into the palace completely freely. Now, you know, that is almost unique, by the way. I mean, obviously, you and I, if we rocked up at Buckingham Palace, we wouldn't just be able to walk in, but nor would most, virtually everyone else. I mean, it is an extremely secure location. So the fact that it seems Maxwell could do this, that she was able to walk into the palace freely, is a further sign of how close her relationship with Andrew was. So I don't think there's any question at all that, you know, they were in a real relationship.
Has this been confirmed in any publications in the UK?
No, it has not been confirmed in any formal publication.
Her entering the palace, has that been confirmed?
No, it has not been confirmed. But I have heard it from very reliable sources, extremely reliable sources. And perhaps I should make it clear that it's information I've obtained. I'm quite sure it's true. I mean, that's what I would say. But the point about her having a relationship, in other words, about her and Andrew being lovers, I've heard that from more than one source. So, I mean, I'm not a person who has friends who are, many friends in high places. But, I am confident that that is true. So, and as you rightly said, this article in The Guardian strongly implies that also. Now, the 1990s is an important time because, of course, this is shortly after Robert Maxwell, Ghislaine's father, died in these very mysterious circumstances when he either fell or was pushed or jumped off his yacht, depending which you prefer, and drowned. And it then turned out that his entire business was, in fact, a Ponzi scheme sustained by money stolen from pension funds of pensioners, of former employees of his companies. So, I mean, she was in deep shock. She presumably needed psychological help. She presumably needed reassurance. And it's quite likely that Andrew was there for her. So, I mean, I don't want to take that away from them both. But clearly, they were very close. However, it was a long time ago. And I'm going to say something else. Yes, it may be that in the lead up to her arrest, and it's quite clear from this conversation that Ghislaine knew that the police, the FBI, was closing in on her and that the Justice Department was closing in on her. It may be that in the run up to that, she was giving out reassurances to various people that she would stand by them, that she would not provide any information. But that isn't consistent with the plea deal that we are hearing about, because the whole nature of a plea deal, I would have thought, especially a plea deal involving conspiracy, is that the prosecutor wants to get the person who is going to agree that deal, firstly, to admit to their guilt, and then secondly, to admit to the conspiracy, and then to identify who the other conspirators are. So I would have thought that would be the priority that the Justice Department would be following, in which case she may find it extremely difficult to resist the pressure of naming names. And if she starts to name some names, it's only a matter of time, I would think, before she named all of them. I mean, that is the situation that she will be facing now. I would make one other very further point, which is directly from this interview. Notice that when she spoke to this person, when Maxwell spoke to this person, she doesn't seem to have protested her innocence. We're talking about plea deals. So the very fact that we're talking about a plea deal, I think has to undermine any protestation of innocence, at least perhaps not in a legal environment where, I'm sure she hasn't yet made any kind of formal confessions or admissions, but in the court of public opinion, which also exists. So as if she's already talking about plea deals, if her friends are saying she's going to have to consider a plea deal. And I was saying the other day in our previous programs that I thought it's really the only option she has is to cooperate fully and to try and get a plea deal. It suggests very strongly that she is not going to plead innocent, plead not guilty to all of these charges, at least not in the end. So we're looking at a complex negotiation. I fully accept, and I entirely believe, and I believe on good sources, that she did, in fact, have a relationship with Andrew. She's perhaps being sincere, or was being sincere, when she said to her friend that she would not, in fact, expose him. But looking at it in the round, looking at it from a practical legal perspective, from the point of view of a defense attorney, I'm sure that whatever defense attorney she gets is going to tell her, Ghislaine, your only prospect of getting a reduced sentence here is to cooperate fully and to name everyone.
All right, I find all of this really bizarre because if Ghislaine cared about Andrew that much, then it would mean that she was also watching Andrew, not even watching Andrew, hooking Andrew up with these underage girls as well, which is very, very bizarre. But she was doing the same thing for Epstein, and supposedly she cared about Epstein as well, according to her friend Goldman. That is, let me just read you one more passage from The Guardian, and maybe it will shed a little more light, if The Guardian is to be believed, as to what's going on. First off, we have the charges that are being brought up against Maxwell. According to The Guardian, Maxwell, the daughter of the late media mogul Robert Maxwell, faces 6 charges: conspiracy to entice minors to travel to engage in illegal sex acts, enticement of a minor to travel to engage in illegal sex acts, conspiracy to transport minors, and transportation of a minor with intent to engage in criminal sexual activity, and 2 of perjury. If convicted, she faces up to 35 years. According to The Guardian, she has denied any wrongdoing. I don't even know what that means. It's one sentence. It just says she has denied any wrongdoing.
Well, she has, informally, yeah. Apparently she has.
Okay,
but that, as I said, is inconsistent with this talk that we're hearing, that she's looking for a plea deal. So, I mean, we're not lawyers. We're not acting as a lawyer, so we can say right. That.
Let me get to what Goldman said, to add some more context to what Goldman said. So Goldman said she became friends with Maxwell in New York in the 1990s. Goldman said she attended Epstein's, quote, wild parties in Palm Beach, Florida, but that she never saw Maxwell with young women. Asked if she thought Maxwell was under the control of Epstein, Goldman said, and I quote, "Yes, I do. That doesn't mean that what she did was okay. I think she thought that if she did one more grooming, found him one more girl, he would marry her. Is that okay? No. She honestly thought that at the end of the day, she was going to be Miss Jeffrey Epstein. She knew she was coming to the end of the road," Goldman said of her most recent conversations with Maxwell. So there you have it, according to Maxwell's friend Goldman. Is it to be believed? I don't know. She said she spoke to Maxwell recently. This is.
I'm sure that part of it is true.
Yeah, okay. So she's providing her insight into how she thought Maxwell was connected to Epstein. In her eyes, she counts it as nothing more than wishful thinking, that if she did as Epstein said, she would become Miss Jeffrey Epstein. It sounds very, very naive and very childish for a woman of Ghislaine's stature and
profile.
And sophistication. It sounds very naive. As does the Prince Andrew thing, Alexander. Just I can't believe that something doesn't add up. She's grooming girls for Andrew, but at the same time, she was deeply in love with him. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, people do very strange things and can be very strange in themselves. I have to say. I ain't going to be a little cynical here. This looks to me like a defense, actually. You know, I did terrible things. I didn't do them, voluntarily. I did them because I was under this influence of this terrible man, and he led me along, and he drew me into all kinds of activities, which if I'd been in my senses, I would never have been involved in. And in a way, it sort of creates a kind of picture of an abusive relationship between Maxwell and Epstein, in which Epstein is the abuser, and Maxwell almost becomes the victim. And, there are some people who may believe that. And I'm not going to say that psychologically such things are impossible, but it comes up against 2 problems for me. First, 3 problems. Firstly, the allegations are on a simply enormous scale. And I mean, it's very difficult to believe from my perspective. that somebody could do something on this scale for such a long time, involving so many people, and not be in some ways a willing and active accomplice in it, an independent willing and active accomplice in it. That is one. The second is the point you made, which is that, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell, from by every account, she's highly intelligent, she's extremely sophisticated, she's extremely well-educated, she's a strong, forceful personality, not someone who, it seems to me, is easily manipulated and twisted in the way that this defense appears to imply. So, you know, those are two, it seems to me, fundamental problems with all of this. And I have to say, the third thing is that given the duration of this relationship between Maxwell and Epstein, surely the point must have come where Maxwell must have said to herself, well, you know, this marriage with Epstein, it's never going to happen, because, I mean, he's going on and we're going on and on with each other. But, I mean, he's clearly not interested in marriage with me. So, I mean, I can express my views. I don't personally think a jury, let's say it went before a court and it was a jury trial, a jury would be persuaded by this evidence. This is my own personal view. Think again, though, of what the implications of this defense are. If her defense is that she was abused, she was abused and drawn by Epstein into doing these terrible things, then that implies that these terrible things happened. So we have an admission of fact. We are, the defense in that case would be a defense of of capacity, that she wasn't really, she didn't have the mental will to do these things because she was subordinated to the will of someone else. I've explained why I have great difficulties believing this, but, you know, hard work for a lawyer to do. And as I said, if she's going for a plea bargain, I think she must herself realize this is going to be a very difficult case to prove before a jury, and a plea bargain is really the only way out.
Yeah, this is a Me Too defense.
It's a Me Too
defense. There's no doubt about it. She's looking for a Me Too defense. It just doesn't add up. This is a twisted, you know what, when I'm thinking about Ghislaine and Andrew and the connection that they had, and then bringing Epstein into this, and then the grooming of the girls and the wider network of other people involved, from the Clintons to the Gates, to the, what's his name, Les Wexner. This is a big, deep, powerful network. There's just a lot more to this that meets the eye. Yeah, they may have been doing each other, you know, Ghislaine and Andrew and Ghislaine and Epstein, and, you know, all of them may have been doing whatever, you know, crazy stuff that they were doing amongst adults. But, you know, the grooming of the girls and bringing them into it suggests to me, and all the other powerful people involved, suggests to me that this was a very wide, powerful, sophisticated network.
Well, can I agree, by the way, I agree with that entirely. And I think everything that we have seen.
Then don't let her get off with the Me Too thing anyway.
I've explained why I don't personally think that has any force. But can I just add something else? And this is an important point. I mean, she in this interview, in this conversation she had with a friend, she said that she was coming to the end of the road. Now, that we discussed in a previous program, how the fact that she was in the United States all along, hiding in New Hampshire and in New England, moving around there, suggests that there were people who were hosting her and, in effect, protecting her. What made her think, when she spoke to her friend a month ago, that she was coming to the end of the road? Could it have been, I'm speculating now, that it was Jeff Berman's sacking? I mean, might it be that she got wind of the fact that with Jeff Berman out of the way, the last obstacle to her arrest had gone? Because what was the reason she would have had for thinking a month ago or whenever it was that she spoke to the friend. I mean, this expression a month, I think we can take with a little. I mean, it's flexible, obviously. What was it that made her think that she really was reaching the end of the road?
But Berman was, I think in my last video, I said that Berman was an Obama appointee. Actually, he was appointed by Sessions.
But he was appointed
by Sessions. 2018.
You're right. You're
that
right.
That was odd. That's odd that Sessions would put him in that position, isn't it?
Well, he was never confirmed. He found himself
exactly.
in this. Yeah, he was never confirmed. He then found himself. It was a very strange and involved process because Trump has never, up till now, been able to nominate a U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York because he's always run into opposition from the two Democrat senators of New York, one of whom is Schumer. So Berman was, in effect, the acting U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, and he was essentially a stopgap figure, but a stopgap figure who was clearly hostile to Trump. And that's consistent with the fact that the Justice Department under Jeff Sessions remained hostile to Trump. We don't have to guess that because throughout the time that Jeff Sessions was Attorney General of the United States and Rod Rosenstein was Deputy Attorney General of the United States, the Justice Department, in the form of the Mueller investigation, was trying to land an obstruction of justice charge against Donald Trump. So, I mean, you know, it's there's clearly a lot going on there. But finally, over the last 2 years, and increasingly perhaps over the last year, the Justice Department seems to be acting on Trump's behalf, or perhaps one should say on behalf of the President of the United States, and in accordance with its duties as a part of the executive branch. And it could be, if our speculation is correct, my speculation is correct, that Berman was an obstacle to the active prosecution of this investigation, that his removal was what opened up the way for Maxwell's arrest. And she may have realized when he was sacked that, in fact, you know, as her friend says, the road was running out for her.
I wonder, I have two comments to make actually, and then we'll wrap up this video, get your thoughts on these two comments. I wonder if the game plan for Ghislaine being housed all over New England and eventually settling down in this cash purchased home in New Hampshire, using her network of very powerful, influential people within the area, within the New England area, giving her refuge. The game plan was to wait it out until the elections, in which case they were under the impression that they may be able to get Trump out, get Biden in, and then just wipe this entire investigation clean. And then the Berman incident happened, and that's where the end of the road came about. In other words, they got rid of Berman, and that was it. Now the Trump White House and the DOJ can go after, they could get the FBI to finally make that arrest. So I wonder if the game plan was, let's just lay low, hide out for another 4 months. We're going to get the White House. This is what they were probably thinking in their arrogance and their stupidity. We're going to get the White House. And then when we get the White House and we put sleepy, creepy Joe, then we're just going to wipe all of this out. And, you know, you'll be free to go. And the network, this cabal, this overarching cabal network that was involved in this business of grooming girls, which I'm convinced is a very big and powerful and wide network, much bigger than the shenanigans of Andrew Epstein and Ghislaine, which I think they were engaged in shenanigans amongst themselves as adults. This wide network said, this is the game plan. Comment, that's my first thought. And then my second thought real quick, Alexander, a lot of people say this may be an attempt to have Ghislaine say something about Trump and try to implicate Trump. I don't think that's going to happen whatsoever. And my thinking there is, if Trump had a connection to Epstein and Ghislaine, an intimate or deep connection to this network, if, I'm speaking hypothetically, if, then Epstein would not have disappeared. Ghislaine would not have been arrested. They would both have shows on MSNBC at CNN. They wouldn't have an hour show. They would have 3 hour shows. They would be the whole nighttime primetime broadcast, those two, irregardless of what they did. Grooming girls, we know how the neoliberals work and the elitists work. They would forget all the bad stuff they did, a la Bill Clinton, all the bad stuff, and they would give them, you name it, they would have it. They would be on TV, they would have shows, they would run the network. That's why I think they have nothing on Trump. If they did have something on Trump, then everything that we have seen up to date would not have happened. That's why I don't think any of this has to do with trying to pin something on Trump. I think it's the reverse, as right. I said before.
Anyway. Right. I mean, let's go to your first point. First of all, I mean, obviously, I don't know, so I'm speculating, but I'm going to speculate that you are absolutely right. I am sure, personally, that the game plan was to wait this thing out, wait for the election to happen, wait for the change of administrations. Then after a few weeks or months, announce, you know, we're terribly, you know, this is a terrible tragedy, but, you know, we've gone through all the evidence without Epstein himself. The evidence is incomplete. So we have to close this investigation down because we can't really build a case against anyone. I mean, I that's exactly how it looks to me. I mean, what other explanation is there for the fact that Ghislaine Maxwell hid for so long? Obviously, she was waiting this thing out. She was waiting for the storm to pass. Otherwise, she would have handed herself in if she knew that sooner or later, you know, a case would be brought against her. It would have made much more sense for her to have handed herself in, instruct attorneys, put in her defense, get it out of the way. This long period of mysterious absence speaks both for a plan to you know, wait the thing out and an expectation that it could be waited out. And also, I mean, from a legal point of view, it's very bad, by the way. I mean, it suggests, again, that she was trying to avoid justice. So that's the first thing. So I am sure, I am personally sure you're right on point one. On point two, all I am going to say is this. If Donald Trump had been implicated in Jeffrey Epstein's misdeeds, he's absolutely terrible. Criminal misdeeds, we would not be hearing the end of it. It would be on every front page. It would be on every news broadcast. It would have been so from the moment that Jeffrey Epstein was arrested. I mean, it would be saturation news. It would also be saturation news now that Ghislaine Maxwell has been arrested. The fact that there has been no word that Donald Trump himself is implicated is the strongest possible sign that he is not implicated. And by the way, I should say, I mean, to the extent that anybody who does not have access to the official papers can do, I have gone through all the material, all the publicly available material in the Epstein case, and I am quite certain that Trump was not involved in anything bad at all. And I am also quite certain that when Trump did find at least some of the things that Epstein was doing, in other words, when he discovered that Epstein was trying to recruit girls in his club in Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump threw him out of the club and apparently reported Epstein to the authorities. So I think that Trump comes out well from this affair, not badly. I mean, obviously, what, you know, grown adults do, that's one thing. What was done to teenage girls, that's a completely different thing. That Donald Trump and Jeffrey Maxwell may have been seen together and filmed together in some events with, you know, which you see attractive women there, that doesn't mean anything. If you're talking about the actual crimes, I'm absolutely sure that Trump is completely innocent of them. I don't think anybody, by the way, anybody who is at all familiar with this case thinks otherwise.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Good to debunk that, because you hear it a lot.
I know. You do hear it a lot. Yeah. It's insinuated. It's continuously insinuated. But it just isn't true. I mean, and can I just say something, Alex? We've had all these insinuations about Donald Trump, you know, that he's financially corrupt. You know, we've heard that so often that, you know, he manipulated his bankruptcy to avoid his creditors. We've heard all of this too, that he doesn't pay taxes or that he evades his taxes, that he's an agent of the Russians, that he was involved with prostitutes and the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. We have been consistently skeptical about every one of those stories. We said there's no truth to any of them. And here we are, 4 years on, and we've been right every time. I predict we are right on this one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure we are.
If, like I said, I mean, I'm being hyperbolic here, but like I said, if there was any wrongdoings going on during the Epstein stuff, then believe me, Epstein would have gotten the Bill Clinton, Michael Avenatti treatment.
quite.
I mean, Michael Avenatti before Michael Avenatti went to prison.
Absolutely.
He would have been the CNN number one contributor.
No doubt.
That's how twisted the mainstream media is.
I mean, everything about Epstein points to his connections being with the Democratic Party establishment. Everything about him. That he was involved with all those kind of people. Absolutely not with people in Trump's circle. Yes, they knew each other. They were involved in some, you know, events, which, you know, perfectly, as far as I can see, innocuous events. Certainly not, you know, wild parties, as far as I can tell. There is no evidence at all that Donald Trump had anything to do with Jeffrey Epstein that had any kind of illegal nature. And by the way, none of the witnesses are suggesting it either.
Anyway, all right. Alexander Merkers, Editor-in-Chief of The Durant, thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Also, smash that like. Go to PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Please donate to us and look for an audio copy of this video on iTunes and on SoundCloud. And go to The Durant Shop, pick up some magic mugs. We've got all kinds of great new merchandise. And go to the Patriotic Legacy, our friends at Patriotic Legacy, and pick up a Patriot Beacon 3, or make any purchase actually from that site, and you'll automatically be entered for a contest to win a Patriot Beacon 3, which is the Swiss Army of flashlights,
torches,
Durant 20. If you put that code in on checkout, you get 20% off any purchase you make from their website as well. They ship internationally, made in the USA, Alexander.
Made in the USA and ship internationally, exactly as Alex said. The best flashlight torch in the world, without any question. They are fantastic and phenomenal products. Strong, rugged, amazingly beautiful, actually. And frankly, I think they look indestructible to me. I mean, I am sure that, you know, if I drop it, which, you know, I don't do, because the very fact that it looks indestructible and feels indestructible gives you confidence that you hold on to it properly. But if I did drop it, I'm sure I'd pick it up and it'd be absolutely as good as you, because it's got that quality of solidity that you get with so many of the really great products that you get from the United States. And it's an amazing torch. But it isn't just solid and strong and indestructible and beautiful. It is an amazing torch. It has an amazing light. It can, you can see how some of its clarity. It's like a sort of almost like sunlight in a way, but very, very bright. It sees enormous distances and you can pick out detail. It's like suddenly when you switch it on, it's full power. It's like you're almost in daylight. It's quite remarkable to see. And if it's very strong, because, and you have people around you and you don't want to blind or dazzle them, well, it comes in various settings. So you can lower the intensity and you can have it around or in a confined space. if I'm, you know, going into my cellar, for example, and looking for, you know, a wine bottle there or something of that kind, then this is the sort of level of intensity I use, not the really powerful intensity. And then if you're on a road at night and you want to alert people to your presence, well, you can flash. And that's an enormously useful thing too, because it, by flashing light, you can draw people's attention very effectively and very well. So it's an amazing torch as a torch. It's a beautiful thing to have and hold, and its solidity gives you this enormous confidence. But it's not just a torch. This is why Alex calls it the Swiss Army knife of torches. It's got all sorts of other amazing aspects and qualities. First of all, it's solar powered, as you can see. So you don't have to worry about putting batteries in and forgetting to put batteries in, which is what I would do because I'm one of the most absent-minded of people. Because if you just leave it out in the light, it recharges automatically. It will never let you down. And that's a wonderful thing. And because it will never let you down, because it's always, you know, power, it's always got power. If you've got other appliances that you need to recharge, like, you know, your laptop or your tablet or your smartphone, well, you've got a port there and you can do it. So you can see the port there. If you also find yourself lost, as I occasionally do when I'm walking in the woods or driving my car and I don't any longer have my sat nav doesn't work for whatever reason, well, there's a compass there, so you can get your bearings, you can get out your map if you've got a map with you. I always have a map in the car, and you can find your way very well. Or if you are lost and you've got a companion, you want to alert people to your presence, it's got an alarm. I have to switch it off very quickly because it attracts my dogs. But that's an enormously useful thing for me when I'm walking them in the woods. All I have to do is to switch it on and they come running. And your friends would come running too. And it's got a magnet. So if you want to sort of put it on, you know, the side of your car, or if you've got a sort of metal hook, which I do, you know, sort of metal place, I could just put it there and it stays there and it's immediately within reach and it's enormously, enormously useful to have. And of course, it's something that you should keep in your car. I always have it when I drive. If anything happens, well, you can use it to break through the windscreen. You can see that there. It's enormously useful. You use this as an ordinary hammer too, by the way. And of course, it's also got this feature which enables you to cut through, you know, your seat belts, you know, cut yourself out of a seat belt or cut someone else out of a seat belt if you have to do that. So it's got absolutely everything. It is the torch you have to have. It is, as I said, amazing torch as a torch. It's beautiful. It's strong. It's indestructible. It has all these other features. It's made in the United States. It's guaranteed high quality and it ships internationally. You cannot afford to be without this torch or flashlight, if you prefer. And you must definitely participate in this competition made by our friends at Patriotic Legacy, the Patriot Beacon, the Swiss Army knife of torches or flashlights, the best flashlight in the world. Alex will remind you at the end of this broadcast how you can get yourself one. And he's absolutely right. We also have amazing things in our shop. We have our famous magic mugs. I've been drinking a lot of hot chocolate from mine recently because my wife, who tends to love hot chocolate more than I do, by the way, she got an amazing hot chocolate making machine. And this is a perfect mug for drinking hot chocolate from. But also coffee, tea, beer, champagne, it keeps whatever you want, either hot or cold, as you need. You can reheat it in your microwave, in your mug, not something I advise you to do, but you can do it, and the handle is cool, and the tea in itself is hot. It's just amazing, and they're beautiful, and they're strong, and they're light, and they don't spoil with age. This one has the coat of arms of the Russian Federation on it, the double-headed eagle of Russia, And you can see that it's in perfect condition, despite the fact that I've had it now, I worked it out for a year and 10 months. And as somebody who goes through things very fast, breaks them, cracks them, smashes them, discolors them, you can see in what good condition it's in. But you can also find other things on our shop. We've got amazing shirts, long sleeve, short sleeve, polo neck, like the one I'm wearing now, V-neck, all 100% cotton. We've also got hats, hoodies, and stickers. We've got ebooks. We've got fabulous things. And Alex is adding to our product range all the time. So come to our shop, buy these great things, support the Durand, get yourself a Patriot Beacon. Alex will tell you how.
Just go to the durandshop.com and go to the Patriotic Legacy as well. Their website is in the description box down below. Alexander Mercurs, editor-in-chief of the Durand. Until next time, everybody, take care.